Tuesday, January 18th, was a crescendo of activity, full every minute. Lennon and I went down to the East Room at 10 o'clock for the swearing-in of the first Negro member for President's Cabinet, Robert Weaver, Secretary of HUD, and his Undersecretary, Robert Woods, who comes from Boston, but not Harvard, MIT. It must have been an emotional moment for a lot of the Negroes in the room, and they were all represented. Roy Wilkins, Dr. Nabert, Whitney Young, Walter Washington, Louis Martin. It was one of those moments when a sense of history hung in the air. Lyndon's speech was good, but not one that has moved me most. This ends weeks of uncertainty about whom to put in that post. He comes to his job with a heavier obligation than most. He's just got to be good, because he is the first Negro. He looks solid. The acceptance in the Congress and the country has been good. Our hopes are high. After the swearing-in, Lyndon brought the Weavers and the Woods with their three children, Whitney Young, Louis Martin, upstairs. We had coffee in the West Hall and talked. And then I went downstairs to the state dining room to meet some 200 members of the United Jewish Women from Pittsburgh that Lucy Moorhead had asked me to receive. I welcomed them, received a plaque. They're going to give $200 toward work at Junior Village as a kickoff for that project. I thanked them and then stood in line to meet every single one. A chorus of, "You look so much better than your pictures." This takes so little out of me in comparison to any speech. It's the least expensive way, mentally and physically, for me to be First Lady, to receive groups of people. Robot ordeal though it may seem to the sophisticated. Then back upstairs for a meeting with two of our ambassador's wives. Mrs. Herbert Powell on her way back to New Zealand and Mrs. Thomas Estes going back to Upper Volta. No need to try to make conversation here. It was racy. Mrs. Estes supplemented what we'd read in the paper about our state visitors early last year, President and Mrs. Yamayoga of Upper Volta. For very sufficient reasons, President Yamayoga, a Catholic, had finally divorced his wife last fall, and now she was grinding her own corn back in her tribal home, wearing a blue costume that indicates you are in disgrace. The glistening white Dior's and fur coat, we remember, vanished like Cinderella's ball gown. And President Yamayoga, who had remarried on the day that he read out to his people his divorce, had been supplanted by a coup on New Year's and was now in protective custody. So short a time from a state dinner and a full descent down the ladder. Mrs. Powell told us, if you were coming to New Zealand and were a tourist, two of the main things you would want to do would be see the hot springs, geysers, and the active volcanoes, and the other to go trout fishing. Trout didn't actually begin there. They were brought from our own northwest, where they grow to about 2 or 3 pounds, and for some reason in New Zealand, they grow to 9 pounds, although she prefers the smaller ones. In a country where the production of wool is the main subsistence, I think it's rather charming that she has learned to spin. Next on the program was a session with Sandy Fox and Bess trying to design some better wedding present and to redesign the ashtrays that we sent out at Christmas time. Sandy is so creative, quick, full of ideas. I like working with him. There'll be many on this staff I'll miss. And then Bess and I had roast beef and pimento sandwiches for lunch on a tray while we went over the 3 upcoming lists. Women doers, the dinner for the vice president, and the reception when we hang Mrs. R's portrait. And then down to the diplomatic reception room to meet Dr. Elizabeth Schwarzhaupt, the Minister of Health for the Federal Republic of Germany, only woman in the cabinet, accompanied by Katie Lockheim and Mrs. Keep from the German embassy, who goes on and on no matter how the ambassadors come and go. And this, too, was an interesting time. I learned that in Germany, the cabinet members are chosen by the chancellor from members of parliament, most likely outstanding members of the party in power, maybe if he wants to find some coalition support from another party. The cabinet member retains his place in parliament and returns to his seat to vote if he sees fit. Also, everybody who belongs to a political party pays dues. I find it amazing that we run a party over here without paying dues. Katie laughed and said we do, but sometimes it's hard. Dr. Schwarzhaupt's English was adequate, and her range of knowledge and experience very wide. She talked about water pollution, that's one of her duties as Minister of Health. The Ruhr, I've heard, though in an industrial district, is one of the cleanest rivers in the world. How pleased I was to toss out my one little morsel of knowledge. Yes, she agreed, but it was so because the industrial plants along its edge are required by government to belong to an association to which they paid dues depending upon the amount of waste they put into the river, and with that they had had research which had produced methods to clean up the river. The same is not true of all of them, much as she wished it was. She was traveling to Pittsburgh and other American cities to study air pollution and urban problems. Just as they left, I said, "You see there the clock that Chancellor Adenauer gave us when he paid us a visit some years ago, and if you were at the ranch with me, you would see the lovely birds that Chancellor Earhart gave us." "I have," said Mrs. Keefe. It turns out she'd been to the ranch last September with a group of Texas Federated Women's Club. No sooner had they left than Mrs. Rusk and Ann Hand arrived with the six ambassadors' wives, most of whom were entitled to sue the State Department for the pictures that were sent to me of them in the advance information. It was Madame Lucet of France, whom I already knew from our days in the International Club, from their upstairs visit with us a few weeks ago. Madame Thai of Vietnam, who just come at Christmas and was suffering housewifely troubles of getting children settled in schools, getting our household arranged. A very pretty, lively lady from the Dominican Republic, Mrs. Messina. It is Lukumbuzaya from Tanzania, who had 9 children, the oldest of which is 10, in a native dress of a long gingham swathe, vaguely related to a sari. Her English perfect, she spoke Swahili also. Her manner calmly dignified and well-spoken. Where on earth I wanted is Tanzania. It's been independent only 4 years. And there was Mrs. Farhan Shibayat, wife of the ambassador of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. We were quickly at home with each other. She's handsome, feminine, charming. We talked of Beirut, where she went to a girls' school, and of archaeology, Baalbek, which led to Petra, a fabulous city carved out of a stone mountain that flourished and perished before Christ. It has recently become the center of much archaeological digging. I told her that the king had brought me some artifacts when he visited us last year. And then, one of the most attractive ones, Mrs. Ernst Limburger, wife of the ambassador of Austria. A hard road to follow Madame Platzer. She speaks 5 languages and is very lively. Talk was personal, feminine, of an international school where all their children could go. And after tea, I showed them the Yellow Room and Lincoln Room and Queen's Room. But somehow it wasn't as good as it should have been. Pleasant, a good idea, but I didn't quite establish that thread of warmth and intimacy that I'd like to do by having these small meetings. But the day was not yet over. As soon as they left, Clark Clifford and Belle Heath arrived. And it was time to shift the gears of my mind to that second interest of my life. I do think beauty's first, Lyndon Baines Johnson Library and School of Public Service. Bill announced the action of the university, naming a committee of 4. Himself, Dr. Norman Hackerman, Dr. Ransom, and Frank Irwin, make recommendations on getting the School of Public Service underway. They were going to form an advisory committee from the faculty, partly to get advice, partly to ensure their cooperation, protect their flanks, as it were, from criticism. We urge that they put Emmett Redford on the committee, and also Dr. Benjamin Wright, a former president of Smith, who's now teaching just a course or two at the university, but a man of great eminence in the world of academics. Bell really wanted to impress upon us the urgency was overtaking us in getting the school started, particularly in setting up a budget for this year. Because with the rapid rise in population, with federal laws that make it possible for everybody to go to college, there are going to be twice as many students, he says, trying to get into public colleges in 1972 as now. What will happen to all the departments? They will all be hammering at the budget for more professors, more classrooms, more equipment, more money. He doesn't want the School of Public Service to be just starting when that flood tide sets in. It is urgent that we get a budget established this year. In order to do that, Clark said, why not send the best qualified man, a good salesman, to the Woodrow Wilson School, to the Littow School at Harvard, to any other such schools we could find, inquire of them what their budgets were, how many students they had, any of the problems and pitfalls he could find out, and maybe at the same time he'd be looking around, evaluating possible directors. Frank Iker joined us for most of the talk, and later Lyndon for a short while. Clark also suggested that Bill get the committee from faculty to suggest names for the director and to evaluate those names we had. We also found that Walter Heller has accepted an invitation to come to a symposium sometime next month. Maybe that means he is really looking the school over a bit. Lyndon, the best salesman among us, had broached the subject to him back in December of taking the job as director. He had given little encouragement, though not a flat no. He'd be wonderful, I think. It would be an absolute dream if John Gardner would do it.
That is,
on the first day after we walk out of this job. A little before 8, they'd all gone. Lyndon was back in his office at work, and I found myself at that time of day when I ought to continue working and don't want to. One delightful thing had happened. Lucy had wafted in on a breeze, happy as a lark, saying that, "Mama, I probably aced it for zoology final." At any rate, she felt very good about it, either an A or a B, she thinks, and with Mr. Nugent in tow, she went happily out to dinner. When people ask me if I am glad about my little girl getting married, if I think she's old enough, what can I possibly answer? How could one know the answer now, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now? And how could I presume that it's not good when she has been so happy for many months? I went over to Lyndon's office to see if I could get him to go swimming. He was deep in conversation with Schultz of the budget, staff members, some I didn't recognize. I stood quietly a long time before I got a word in edgeways. Finally, "Would you go swimming with me? Let me sign my mail. You go and get on in. I'll join you." And so I did, and swam 40 laps of the pool before he arrived. No grace, no style, but plenty of endurance. It's a luxury I intend to enjoy fully while I'm here, as much as my investment in hairdos will allow. We swam and talked about Lucy and the library and his day's quota of troubles, and then a 10:40 dinner, a massage, and bed.